From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Tuesday edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us. As we mentioned yesterday, we are broadcasting from the U.S. Department of State, where Secretary Mike Pompeo is hosting the second annual Ministerial to Advance Religious Freedom this week with over 1,000 representatives from 130 countries.
All people from every place on the globe must be permitted to practice their faith openly in their homes, in their places of worship, in the public square, and believe what they want to believe.
That was Secretary of State Mike Pompeo earlier this morning when he opened the event. And we're going to be here covering the entire week with a comprehensive overview of this historic event, largest gathering at the State Department on a human rights event, and of course the largest gathering on religious freedom issues. In just a moment, I'll talk with Mark Green, the administrator for the U.S. Agency for International Development. Today, he discussed how religious freedom helps propel USAID's beneficiaries on the journey to self-reliance as they transform from beneficiaries to partners to donors. And there's a key role that the faith community plays in that as well, so we're going to talk about that. In my second segment, I'll talk with fellow Commissioner Christina Arriaga from the United States Commission on International Religious Freedom about a recent example of the curtailing of religious freedom in Cuba. Actually, five pastors trying to get to the event from Cuba detained, not allowed to come. At the bottom of the hour, I'll talk with Tristan Abajez, the Hungarian State Secretary for the Aid of the Persecuted Christians. We'll talk with him. And Travis Weber, Family Research Council's Vice President of Policy and the Director of the Center for Religious Freedom, about the religious freedom challenges in China and kind of an overview of today's activities here at the State Department. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T. Perkins. And by the way, as always, if you miss anything on your way home, it's all archived right there at TonyPerkins.com. As I mentioned, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, who is spearheading this second annual Ministerial to Advance Religious Freedom at the State Department, has invited over 1,000 different leaders from both the governmental realm, the non-governmental organizations, civil society. So it's an eclectic gathering of those from different faiths. I mean, every faith group represented here, even those who really have no faith, are here. It's about freedom, the freedom of religion, freedom of belief. Well, joining me now to talk about this historic event and the role that the United States government in every aspect is playing when it comes to our foreign policy in advancing international religious freedom is the administrator for the U.S. Agency for International Development. He spoke today, actually headed off the second portion of the day with a speech, and that is Ambassador Mark Green. Ambassador, welcome to Washington Watch.
It's great to be with you.
Let's start out by highlighting something that Secretary Pompeo said yesterday. He was on the program talking. He highlighted the unalienable right that each of us has bestowed by God to, and I quote, practice one's religion and follow their conscience and to take care of their soul, end quote. I mean, this is critical, and you're coming in, especially you spoke about several troubled areas in the world, but in particular, you've been going deep in Iraq, in that region of the world, and faith has been at the center of the conflict there, but it's also a part of the resolution.
Yeah, that's very, very much true. So, as we all know, ISIS attempted to extinguish Christianity and Yazidis and other religious and ethnic minorities from the region. Of course, they've been there for thousands of years, but they've always been part of the cultural mosaic. They are part of what makes Iraq a special place. Yazidis tried to wipe them from the face of the earth. And so we think that part of ultimately defeating ISIS is rolling back what they attempted to do. So we're working with community leaders. We're working with faith-based leaders to do development work, to restore essential services so that these poor people can begin to rebuild their lives, begin to restore their way of life, and not be forced to leave. So it's a crucial part of what we do. But you said something very important. For us at USAID, around the world, We are far more effective when we partner with the community of faith. The community of faith, faith-based organizations, help us to reach corners that we could not reach in this world through the government. Secondly, the community of faith, faith-based organizations, take a look at those who we serve as whole people.
Right.
They minister to the whole person. And so in so many cases, the damage that's been caused through religious persecution, through the scourge of terrible diseases, we're able to do material things as a government agency.
Right.
But if we partner with the community of faith, we really can help lift lives and build communities.
But that's it. You know, I know there's been other administrations, but I think this administration is doing this quite well, because you don't see the faith community as competition, but rather, as you said, a partner, because together we can do so much more than if we try to do it alone.
Oh, very much so. And I particularly want to salute Vice President Pence. Vice President Pence has been a fearless advocate for working with the faith community. The door is open.
Mm-hmm.
And we not only welcome the community of faith, but we seek out the community of faith. Because, again, that's how we're much more effective. I mean, we're more effective for the American taxpayer.
Right.
When we partner with the community of faith to reach those corners that are otherwise left behind and left out.
Well, I would say this, Administrator Green, you're modeling what we're wanting other countries to do when it comes to religious freedom, is to allow, you are allowing these religious NGOs to fulfill their calling, to right. serve others by partnering with them.
You know, you'd mentioned about the extraordinary numbers here. So last year, the numbers, which were probably 30% of what they are this year, that was a large ministerial.
Right,
that
right.
was a huge gathering. And I think some of it, quite frankly, was probably curiosity to see whether or not the administration was serious. This year, we've had to turn people away. So the 1,000 people who are here, it could have been much larger. So I think, first off, people see the administration, the president, the vice president, is actually serious about partnering right. with the community of faith. Secondly, I think there's a recognition that religious freedom is under attack in too many areas, and that we do have to protect the religious freedom that benefits those of other faiths if we expect for it to be preserved.
And
for
you
ourselves.
Made that clear in your comments today, that this is about the fundamental human right of religious freedom, regardless of what that faith may be, or even if there's no faith. It's a fundamental human right.
It is
choose.
Freedom of conscience. It is what brought people to these shores in the first place, that fundamental freedom that makes every other freedom possible. It is what makes America what America is. But as we all know, it's much more than that. This is not simply an American value. It is a universal value. And that's why I think you see the numbers here.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. My guest in this first segment, the administrator for the U.S. Agency for International Development, Mark Green. We're at the ministerial State Department, a historic gathering of leaders from around the world. I want to go back to Iraq, where you've done a lot of work. You've been there. You've been the vice president, shown a lot of interest in the role of USAID in coming in and creating opportunity for economic development and stability, basic infrastructure, allowing people to come back in. You've got the others take care of the security issue. You take care of the stability issue. How important is it? You talk about ISIS and what they did there. From my perspective, tell me if I'm right or wrong, but this is critical for that region of the world, that this work, that this rebuilding in Iraq is successful, so that ISIS cannot come back in, that they cannot claim that they purged this region. So this, you know, we were talking before that we went on the air that Americans have a short attention span. We're not yet stable in that region. We still have some work to do.
We definitely have work to do. You know, something interesting that was said to me by an Iraqi leader in Baghdad. I was talking about minority communities, and he said, you know, we don't call them minority communities. And I said, what do you mean? He said, we call them component communities because we don't believe that we can be whole as a country if we do not have these components. So
mm-hmm.
he was Muslim. He said, look, if we don't have our Christian community in northern Iraq, we are not Iraq. We are not that cultural mosaic of faiths that we believe is a source of strength. And I think he's right. So we really are trying to open the door to the restoration of the tolerant culture that was there for so long. As we all know, these are, for we Christians, truly holy lands, important right. lands, fundamental right. to our religious identity. And we want people to have the freedom to be able to return to those lands. It's hard work. It's down in the community, but we're working with some wonderful faith leaders, community leaders, and we're working to do the hard work of restoring electricity, restoring water, so that people have some sense that they're welcome, that they can be here, that they can begin to rebuild their lives and have a future there.
You know, this is, I was just thinking as you were describing the things that have to take place there, that are taking place there, and what USAID does really around the world. It's exhausting work. It is a costly work. But, you know, that's a part of leading. And for America, if America wants to help shape, especially on this issue of religious freedom, and promote this value which brings with it economic growth, social stability, it takes work.
It does take work, but I agree with you. I believe in America as a shining city on a hill. I believe in an America that stands for certain values, and religious freedom is at the heart of that. What we need to do is to help these countries get back on their feet. We build their capacity to lead themselves. They are sovereign,
so
independent.
We want to bring them to a point where they're self-sustainable. It's not long-term.
The purpose of foreign assistance must be ending its need to exist. So we want to help them lead themselves. We'll walk with them in that journey, but it is their journey. And we can be compassionate by providing those things which they cannot provide for themselves, but we seek to put them in a position to lead themselves.
Almost out of time, Ambassador Green. Where else in the world should we be looking for? I mean, where are some of the hot spots in the world?
Well, I always look to Venezuela. So in Venezuela, 10% of the population of Venezuela have now fled the country. And the largest Venezuelan city outside of Venezuela is Lima, Peru. 5,000 net per day are leaving. And these poor people are suffering horribly. Northern Nigeria, where Christians right. are under attack. So the world's on fire in a number of places. But I do believe in the power of faith, and I do believe in the power of working with faith groups to lift lives, build communities, and create opportunities for a brighter future.
Ambassador Mark Green, thanks so much for taking time out today to join us.
Oh, I'm honored to be with you.
Appreciate the work that you do and the perspective that you bring to USAID in partnering with the faith community, our friends like Franklin Graham at Samaritan's Purse and so many others that have a calling. We all have a calling to help. Some are on the front lines, some are on the back lines, but we appreciate the partnership.
Thank you.
All right. Well, folks, don't go away. More Washington Watch to come when we return. Commissioner Christina Arriaga, fellow commissioner at the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, joins me. Some pastors from Cuba wanting to attend this ministerial, well, they didn't make it. Why? Well, it has something to do with the Cuban government and their hostility toward religious freedom. So Christina is going to join me later. We're also going to get an update on what Hungary is doing to protect religious freedom around the world for Christians. That's next. Don't go away. More to come.
Can United States senators interrogate court nominees on their religious beliefs? This is a controversial question that our country is facing today. In light of this controversy, FRC has taken up the task of answering this question with one of their latest publications, Rebels Without a Clause. We've seen in recent Senate confirmation hearings a troubling pattern arise where senators have begun questioning presidential nominees about their faith as an attempt to discredit them. These interrogations have gone so far as to asking nominees of their theological beliefs, church membership, and associations with faith-based nonprofits. It has been an alarming display of hostility toward religion and people of faith. Visit frc.org/test to learn what questioning the Constitution's No Religious Test Clause allows and forbids in the process of confirming judicial nominees. That's frc.org/test.
The latest Trojan horse on Capitol Hill is called the Equality Act. The way the left is advertising this bill is misleading because it does not further equality at all. It would actually violate current protections in place that allow private institutions and people of faith to freely act in accordance to their deeply held beliefs. The Equality Act explicitly removes religious liberty protections that were originally put in place with bipartisan support. Its stated goal is equality, but its actual result is harm to vast members of communities, individuals, and Americans as a whole by undercutting our foundational freedom of religion. Is this really what equality looks like? A more fitting name for the Equality Act would be the Inequality Act. For more information on the mass threat of the Equality Act, visit frc.org/EqualityAct2019. That's frc.org/EqualityAct2019.
Many advances made by the homosexual movement are based on the claim that sexual orientation is immutable or unchangeable. This belief was a deciding factor in the 2015 Supreme Court case that redefined marriage to include same-sex couples. It has been a key argument for LGBT activists fighting to restrict or ban therapies for people seeking help to overcome their same-sex attraction. But is sexual orientation written in stone? Should we brand people with an immovable sexual orientation label and tell them, you can't change, don't try to change, even if they want to? In a new publication from FRC, we reveal that sexual orientation can change. Survey data shows that heterosexuality is largely stable, but homosexuality is not. Even pro-LGBT scholars are calling for the immutability argument to be abandoned. The question is, why is the LGBT movement pushing this false argument? To learn more, visit frc.org/sexualorientation. That's frc.org/sexualorientation.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us on this Tuesday afternoon. As I mentioned, you're probably hearing a lot of background noise. We are at the United States State Department, where the second annual Ministerial to Advance Religious Freedom is taking place. Over 1,000 representatives from about 130 countries gathered here for this historic event, one of the largest of its kind ever to take place. But it, again, just reflects on this administration's priority on religious freedom, in particular the Secretary of State, who is making clear that religious freedom is a key component of foreign policy. And we were just talking with the administrator of the United States Department of International Development, or Agency for International Development, about the key component that religious freedom plays in rebuilding many of these countries and coming alongside them. Well, joining me now is one of my fellow commissioners on the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, Christina Arriaga. She joins me today to talk about, you know, we were talking about religious freedom. There were a group of pastors from Cuba, a country that increasingly is becoming problematic when it comes to religious freedom. And they've been a problem for a long time, but it's getting worse. Five pastors attempting to come to this event were prohibited from coming. What happened? Christina Arriaga fills us in. Christina, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Increasingly, Cuba is becoming a bad actor when it comes to religious freedom. Tell us about these pastors.
Yeah, this is a historic moment for religious freedom in Cuba. For the first time in 60 years since the Fidel Castro dictatorship started, evangelicals all over the country have been getting together and have been starting to push back on the Cuban government, and that has had serious consequences. The ministerial invited five pastors to come, and four of them yesterday, as they were leaving the airport in Havana, were detained for an extended period of time, were told they would not be going to quote-unquote Pompeo's event. And if there is any reason to believe that religious freedom exists in Cuba, this is certainly something that negates that immediately.
And I should mention, if people can't tell from the accent, you have connections with Cuba. So this is a country that you know a lot about and are tracking very closely.
Yes, my father escaped Fidel Castro's Cuba precisely because he could not live according to his religious convictions in Cuba at the beginning of the revolution. My mother had already been in a concentration camp in Germany. So I grew up with a very strong commitment to freedom, very grateful to be an American, but also for a passion, as evangelicals would call it, a heart for defending those freedoms that are a birthright. And I have been following Cuba for the last 25 years. And this is something that's very close to me. I know all of these pastors. I have spoken to him. They have met with commissioners and they have cried in our offices about how terrible their situation is in Cuba. And yet they were brave enough to try to come back. And these pastors were defiant. They prayed openly in the airport in a communist country. And they also wrote statements saying, please tell the American people, please tell the world that this is what is happening in Cuba to Christians.
Well, I think this should, first of all, let me just say, you've done a remarkable job on the commission advocating for religious freedom, and in addition to the lifelong work that you've done advocating for others. So I commend you and thank you for that. But this underscores the very need for this ministerial, that you have five pastors invited to come, and one got through, but only because we think they made a mistake and didn't recognize his name. But this underscores why this issue is so important.
This is the key issue of our generation, and I think is the key issue for freedom around the world. The only place where people are free to breathe outside of communism in Cuba is churches and places where they can hear that their rights do not come from the state and the state cannot take them away. The bishop that made it through said he will believe it's a miracle, but he also has a very common name, so he thinks that perhaps they got confused. But he told me that in spite of all the repression in Cuba, he's baptizing people 1,000 at a time, because there is such thirst for something transcendent. So he has seen those resurgence of belief, but also a resurgence in repression.
Now, the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom released a statement on this situation earlier today, saying, we urge the Cuban government to allow these religious leaders to participate in this important conversation in person and to return to Cuba to work together with officials to improve religious freedom conditions for all of its citizens. Are we seeing, I mean, I know it's early, we're still working on this, but any movement to see them be able to attend?
Well, on the way here, I spoke to one of the organizing pastors, and he said they had not seen any movement. They do not have high hopes for their being able to get on an airplane. Not only that, last Friday, a Christian reporter who was meeting with the Ladies in White, a group of ladies that try to go to church every Sunday and dress in white to represent their families who are in prison or have been killed, this Christian lawyer went to interview them, and at noon, he was grabbed by the police and he disappeared. So the pastors are bold, but also in fear that their situation will not get better. And this is why we need to talk about it.
Commissioner Arriaga, you know, people, you know, probably don't necessarily associate Cuba with the religious repression. I mean, they know it's a communist country. The latest report, give us a quick synopsis of the latest report of the USERF Commission, a synopsis of where religious freedom and Cuba, where it stands in Cuba.
Yeah, Fidel Castro, when he started the revolution, said within the revolution, everything, outside of the revolution, nothing. So in this moment in Cuba, the only way that you can go and worship in a church is if your church is registered, which means that church has to give out the Castro message. They aren't able to talk about the freedoms that we enjoy. So some churches, out of fear, have registered and have become official communist churches. But all of these pastors belong to unregistered churches. They are trying to get the rights that everyone else should have, right to build a church, right to worship freely, right to have religious newspapers, of religious radio, religious television. There are only five stations in Cuba, and all you have to do is watch one, and it's the same communist message. There's nothing else for them there, and they're trying to organize a civil society movement for freedom.
Well, it's certainly a country that we should be praying about. I mean, it's a neighbor, one right there 90 miles from our border there in Florida, and one that I would hope that we could influence in a positive way. Commissioner Cristina Arriaga, thank you so much for stopping by and joining us today.
Thank you, and thank you, Tony Perkins, for your work.
All right, thank you. Well, folks, don't go away. More Washington Watch to come. Still to come, we're going to be checking in with Hungary and what they're doing to protect persecuted Christians. Also, Travis Weber going to be joining me. Give us an overview of today's gathering here at the State Department for the second annual Ministerial to Advance Religious Freedom. That's coming up next. Don't go away.
In states like New York, Virginia, and Vermont, radical legislation has been written legalizing abortion late in pregnancy, when babies can feel pain and are able to live outside the womb.
Happy birthday to you.
They've gone even further, repealing protections of infants born alive, allowing killing even after birth.
Happy
Congress has yet to protect the life of every newborn baby. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com to send Nancy Pelosi a newborn hat to show Congress every new life should be welcomed with warmth and love, not hate, not death. End birthday abortions. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com.
Happy birthday to you.
Paid for by Family Research Council.
There is unprecedented religious persecution around the globe. In recent years, research has found increasing governmental and social hostility towards religious believers worldwide. For the last 10 years, Christians have been harassed in more countries, including the United States, than any other religious group. While the specific threats to religious freedom vary in type and intensity, one common source is the legal and cultural support for apostasy, blasphemy, and anti-conversion laws, which often threaten the freedom to choose or change one's faith. In a new publication from Family Research Council, we list which nations around the world have these unjust laws on the books and spotlight people who have faced severe penalties simply for sharing or changing their faith. For more information on religious hostility due to apostasy, blasphemy, and anti-conversion laws around the world, visit frc.org/ABA laws. That's frc.org/ABA laws.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad that you are with us as we continue our coverage of the second annual Ministerial to Advance Religious Freedom being held this week at the U.S. Department of State. Now, one of the countries that has been doing remarkable work in helping Christian communities in the Middle East rebuild, as well as bringing greater attention to the persecution of Christians around the world, is Hungary. And they've been doing this work, actually, for quite some time, especially in the Middle East. Well, joining me now is Hungary's State Secretary for the Aid of Persecuted Christians, Tristan Asbej. Secretary, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
But before we go into discussion, the panel that you are on, Mr. Secretary, let's talk about, first off, the priority that your Prime Minister, Viktor Orban, has placed on religious freedom, in particular, the defense of Christianity, not only in Europe, but really the entire world. He has declared that, quote, Christianity is Europe's last hope. What did he mean by that?
Well, the Hungarian government has started its aid program for persecuted Christians in 2016 for two reasons. One is a humanitarian reason, and that reason is that currently Christianity is the most persecuted religion in the world. This sounds like a sweeping statement, but the facts support this. According to surveys by the Hungarian government, but also by the British government.
Right, I'm going to have them on the program tomorrow talking about the recent study that was just released.
So there, and our results show that about 80% of the people who are persecuted for their faith or belief in the world are Christians. So the Hungarian government recognized this and started an aid program, but at the same time, we are also proud and outspoken about our Christian identity and Christian culture as a government.
I guess what I appreciate about that and the Hungarian government here last year at the ministerial bringing that issue to the forefront is that in spite of all the, you know, this politically correct culture that, you know, does not want to mention Christianity, you, based on the facts, are working very aggressively to help persecuted Christians. Your government actually designating money in your federal budget to help rebuild communities in Iraq and helping persecuted believers around the world.
That is correct. We always prefer truth over political correctness. So we prefer to say that we are a Christian nation. This has nothing to do with religion. Politicians should not interfere with the relationship between man and God. We are referring to values based on which our society, our culture, our traditions were built on, and those are the Judeo-Christian values. And we are ready to defend those. But what is more important than defending values is to defending actual people who are Christian. And since Christianity is the most persecuted religious group in the world, and it's highly neglected in the international arena by the international organizations, including the human rights organizations, we felt like it's our human moral obligation to come to their aid. So this is why we have set up this department that I'm heading. But with that, it's more than just a governmental structure. We indeed started an aid program that has now activities in countries like Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Jordan, even in Africa, in Nigeria, Ethiopia, with the goal of saving the Christian communities that are in minority, that suffer pressure, or that are endangered of being annihilated from the cradle, very cradle of Christianity, which is also the very cradle of our civilization.
And Tristan, you've found a kind of a partner in the United States under this administration, where you're working with USAID. In fact, Administrator Mark Green was on the program earlier today, and as we were talking after the program, I told him I was going to have you on, and he had nothing but glowing things to say about Hungary and the work that you're doing.
Yes, and we very much appreciate that. You see, Hungary is a small country. It's only 10 million people, and our economy is developing, but still we suffered from communist dictatorship for 40 years in the last century, so we are not the wealthiest nation, even in the European Union. So we can only contribute so much to persecuted Christians. In the first two years, we have contributed $32 million to these communities, which is perhaps not much, but it was at that time exactly $32 million more than any other government gave to persecuted Christian communities. And we were very glad and proud that USAID and the U.S. government drew inspiration from our program and announced that Vice President Mike Pence has announced that the U.S. would help and already helping persecuted Christians and other religious minorities first in Iraq. And the next step was in last December when the Hungary Helps program, that is the name of our aid program, and USAID have signed a memorandum of understanding that we are about to announce the first projects in the hopefully near future.
Well, we appreciate the work that the Hungarian government is doing. Also, I didn't even get into it in this program, but promoting the family and encouraging parents to have children. I've been on some policy panels with members of the Hungarian government talking about the family policies that the government is pursuing. So a lot of good things happening in the country of Hungary. So, Mr. Secretary, thanks so much for taking time to join us today.
Thank you for the opportunity. God bless you.
Folks, to find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. When we come back, Travis Weber, Vice President of Policy and who oversees our Center for Religious Liberty, joins me to kind of give a summary of today. Later this afternoon, we had former Congressman Frank Wolf and Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House, speaking about China. We're going to talk about that and more when we return. Don't go away. More Washington Watch to come right after this.
Did you know that babies survive failed abortions? Sadly, many of these babies are denied their human right to life and are allowed to die. Currently, there is no federal criminal statute in place to protect these babies after they are born alive.
Congress and state legislatures across the country have responded by putting forth legislation to protect infants who survive abortion. However, leftist politicians have blocked efforts in Congress and in state legislatures to pass the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act, which requires that life-saving medical care be given to babies born alive after failed abortion attempts. We must decide as a country where we stand on the issue of infanticide, to either pursue humane protections for those most vulnerable in our society, or continue to subject innocent human life to the whims of abortionists. For more information, visit frc.org/bornalive. Today, military personnel are at greater risk than ever of suffering from a mental health condition. On average, 21 active and retired military members take their own lives every day. Richard Gleaston, a military and veteran advocate in the area of mental health, recently shared evidence that faith-based solutions can help stop this crisis. Here's what Richard had to say.
There's new science out that they watch people while they're praying or have a religious relationship. The frontal part of their brain, if I'm correct in remembering what they told me, it strengthens it. It reduces depression, reduces anxiety and stress while you're doing it. So not only did God give us prayer as a way to alleviate our spirit, it also alleviates our mind and our bodies. Our bodies react in a positive way to a faith-based relationship.
Visit frc.org/speakers to hear more.
Did you know that thanks to President Trump, abortion giant Planned Parenthood can no longer receive up to $60 million in federal funding? This new federal protection for the unborn is thanks to a rule change that the Trump administration implemented to the Title X Family Planning Grant Program, which will take effect in May 2019. Not only do the new Title X rule changes take funding away from our nation's largest abortion supplier, they also ensure that taxpayer dollars are not used for abortion and open the door for pro-life pregnancy resource centers and other faith-based organizations to apply for Title X funds, thus expanding the health care options of needy families who are experiencing unexpected pregnancies. For more information about the new Title X rule changes that protect the unborn and increase health care options, visit frc.org/Title X. That's frc.org/Title X.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins.
This is the largest human rights event ever hosted at the State Department and the largest religious freedom event ever done in the world.
That was Ambassador Large for International Religious Freedom, Sam Brownback, earlier this morning when he kicked off the second annual ministerial to advance religious freedom here at the U.S. Department of State. Full day of activities here. We're broadcasting all this week from the State Department as we'll bring you different policy experts and those involved in advancing religious freedom around the world. Joining me now is the Vice President of Policy here at the Family Research Council and the Director of our Center for Religious Freedom, Travis Weber. Travis, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony.
A lot happening here today, a lot of stories told about religious persecution. But I want to go back. I have another clip from Ambassador Brownback from this morning talking about basically the purpose for today's gathering. Let's play the other clip from Ambassador Brownback.
80% of the world's population live in a religiously restricted place. It's time. It is past time to bring down these religious restrictions so that the iron curtain of religious persecution can come down for one and all, and it comes down now.
80% of the world's population living in restrictive and repressive areas. I mean, that's huge.
It's huge, Tony, and it comes in so many different forms, too. It's really almost mind-blowing when you try to put your finger on the question of worldwide religious freedom violations, whether in the form of social hostility, governmental oppression, different varieties and causes of that governmental oppression and social hostility, the group being persecuted, and the specific manner in which that arises. The scale of worldwide religious freedom violations is huge, and this is partly why we're addressing it here at FRC. It needs a voice, and it needs Christians to speak up to address the problem.
Of course, one of the reasons 80% of the population, that percentage, is so high is because you look at some of the countries with the world's largest populations, and they tend to be some of the worst abusers. I mean, you look at China, Pakistan, India, India in particular, with a large population there. These are countries with large populations, and they're very repressive in their policies.
Very repressive. And some of those you mentioned, China specifically, the source of their persecution, government-driven, due to a state ideology, a state driving a position that says everyone must fall into line with the rights that the government dictates, not rights that come from God, not rights that derive from every human being created in the image of God, not that version of human rights, but rather the rights that we give you as the government. What the government says you shall have. This is how the Chinese government and others approach this question of religious freedom in society. It's very wrong-headed. It's false. It's destructive. It's harmful. And it needs our voice to counter it.
Earlier this morning, kicking off the ministerial, the Secretary of State made brief comments, but in his comments made reference to the Commission on Unalienable Rights, which he talked about on this program yesterday. You know, coming back to those God-given rights and religious freedom being among them, and despite the kind of the pushback that the Secretary has gotten for wanting to look at these fundamental human rights, they're staying the course, and I really think this ministerial is further evidence of this administration's commitment to religious freedom.
Tony, if we look at where the modern human rights framework really began to put religious freedom to paper, we look at the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. After the formation of the United Nations, this declaration of human rights being put to paper, the key word being human rights there, they're not specifically only for Christians. They're not Christian rights, Muslim rights, Buddhist rights, etc., but rather human rights. The Christians have a vision of the world, and our faith informs how we believe all human beings are entitled to these rights. But this is the key, and this is a reality that so much of the hostile and willfully biased reporting on discussion of human rights these days and religious freedom really overlooks. They overlook the reality that we understand human rights to be for everyone and will fairly protect them for everyone regardless of their faith.
Yeah, the founders didn't invent these rights. They didn't discover these rights. They were latent. These are fundamental rights granted to us by God. Now, not obviously, not every country, every government has protected and promoted those rights, but that's what made America unique, is that they understood these rights were granted by God, to every human being, and that it was incumbent upon governments to protect and promote these rights. And quite frankly, I think the growing body of research that we've talked about here, about economic development that follows religious freedom, greater social stability, I think America is a perfect example of that. And it is all the more reason that we should be promoting this, not only abroad, but even here domestically.
This is an important point because it's often overlooked in the discussion of human rights and religious freedom. We need to argue the truth, the reality that, as you mentioned, our rights come from God. The government merely recognizes and states that they are coming from God, and so they will enforce and uphold that. They don't grant us our rights, the right to religious freedom and human rights. But even for countries unwilling to accept that, they should look at the evidence that religious freedom correlates with economic development and national security. Long term, if you want to sustain those areas, you need to sustain religious freedom. This is a point that's perfectly complementary with the work that USAID are doing right now, our State Department's doing overseas, which we're trying to highlight tonight at our side event on Syria and the situation in northeast Syria. You want to deal with Iran, Turkey, in the context of a hostile Middle East to protect Israel, you need to sustain areas like northeast Syria, which are developing into a free, stable area, an outpost in an island of in an ocean of hostility. These situations are worldwide, and they develop in different ways. They're important to the discussion of religious freedom.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. As you can hear, a lot of noise in the background. That is sounds from the second ministerial to advance religious freedom here at the U.S. Department of State. Travis Weber, Vice President of Policy and Government Affairs here at the Family Research Council, my guest, as we kind of summarize some of the activities of the first full day of the ministerial. Travis, this afternoon, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi was on a panel with former Virginia Congressman Frank Wolf, a champion of religious freedom, interviewed by Ambassador at Large for Religious Freedom, Sam Brownback. Here's a clip of what Nancy Pelosi had to say about religious freedom.
But when it comes to religion, freedom of religion, that's for punishing people for what they believe, and if they act upon their beliefs. So it seems to separate it out as how can you separate people from what they believe unless you have no beliefs yourself and can't appreciate that other people do.
Travis, what do you say to that?
I'm glad that she distinguished religious freedom from other freedoms, other rights, even other human rights, because ultimately religious practice, religious freedom derives from God, from an authority higher than ourselves, from the human plane of existence, from the world in which we live. So you have to distinguish that. If you don't distinguish that, everything else is off kilter, everything else is skewed and is messed up. I'm glad that the speaker described it this way. Now, what we need to do is understand how that impacts all societies around the world. And they discussed China, rightly focused on China and the oppression in China. Frank Wolf discussed companies complicit in the abuses in China. But this vision of religious freedom, the description that Speaker Pelosi described, applies here in the United States too. And we need to understand how religious freedom properly and fairly implemented for all faiths across the board, in all circumstances, fair implementation allows people to live out their faith as it affects their jobs, public service, and the public square. Very important.
And that was a part of, you know, her definition there is the ability to live your faith, to be guided by and directed by your faith. So I think you're right. There are some that are, you know, quick to apply a standard in foreign policy, but it has similar application here in domestic policy. We've got to mirror, or rather model, what religious freedom looks like, I think, for the rest of the world.
We do. And Tony, you know, it's good that we have support for addressing these things that are going on in other countries, rightly horrible things, detention, arbitrary detention, abuse, persecution and torture of groups like the Uyghurs. And they discussed Ilham Todi, who's a Uyghur, and you've adopted a Uyghur prisoner of conscience recently. It's right to focus on these issues, and Christians, because of our faith and understanding of the human being, focus on these. But we also, that same vision of religious freedom leads us to understand that we have to be free here at home to live out our faith, and it informs all aspects of this issue at home or abroad.
Right. Again, you're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. The website, tonyperkins.com. Travis Weber, my guest. Travis, you mentioned the discussion of China. That was the major focal point of the conversation that Speaker Pelosi had with Congressman Wolf and Ambassador Brownback. Here's a short clip of former Congressman Frank Wolf talking about the religious persecution in China and what's behind it.
The number of companies that are willing to do business and aid the Chinese government. I mean, in 1980, no law firm in this city would have ever represented the Soviet Union. Today, the number of law firms that are representing China, and yet you look what's taking place to the Uyghurs, what's taking place in Tibet. So I think they're the two things that I see that trouble me very much.
Congressman Wolf has been on the program a number of times, talked about that before, but I think there might be a growing understanding that U.S. businesses, I'm talking about Fortune 500 companies, major companies, that are facilitating the Chinese government and their repression of religious people in that country. And the hypocrisy here, these are some of the same countries that want to, you know, talk about being protectors of quote-unquote human rights here at home.
Yeah, Tony, you know, when it comes to this issue, they can't be allowed to hide behind a slick ad campaigns, slick phrasing of the issue and sort of getting around it. Right is right and wrong is wrong. And here you have just issues that you have bipartisan acknowledgement of the horrible things that are going on in China right now. It's clear to Americans, everyone in America, that what is going on there is horrible. So how at the same time then do you have large corporations turn around and try to convince us that it's okay to be involved in furthering activities which further those abuses and human rights violations in China? Spotlight needs to be put on this issue, as Frank Wolf mentioned, because right is right. You know, we've discussed this issue, we've highlighted it, sent a letter recently highlighting, discussing this complicity of business with abuse in China and other places around the world, but specifically China when it comes to technology used to suppress the population. You need corporations to develop that technology, and they should not be helping develop it for China.
So, Travis, just kind of looking over the first day of the ministerial, anything that jumps out at you as, you know, one of those, wow, didn't know that, or this was of particular interest to you?
Yeah, Tony, I thought it was good to hear from the Sri Lankan advocate in the morning, you know, she bring attention to the attack on the church there in Sri Lanka, giving voice to a country that's, you know, not well known apart from some of these news-making stories, sad news-making stories. It was good to hear from a voice like hers. It was good to hear National Security Council representative introducing a Uyghur prisoner story, the story of Imam Todi, who I mentioned. It was Ambassador Green, USAID Administrator Mark Green, very clear in his support for religious freedom, the need to address development of religious freedom, and recognition that this administration is why this is happening. That has to be acknowledged as part of this program today.
You know, one of the issues that, you know, you have to think through as we look at international religious freedom is that, you know, when you have some activities in the name of religion that is repressing other religions, it becomes a difficult situation to work through. Christianity being one that embraces the freedom of all human beings to choose. Some faiths are not that open.
Tony, this is a good point because we have clear principles for how we think about this. We obviously freely share our faith, desiring people to understand and come to our faith, but that there's no oppression, coercion involved in that. That's a free and open marketplace of ideas where everyone is permitted to choose a faith and live it as they see fit within the bounds of an orderly, peaceful society, for security and criminal issues, obviously. But when it comes to faith dynamics, everyone should be free to share it,
right,
and people choose the faith and live it out as they see fit.
And we want to and will defend that right of all human beings. Travis, we're out of time. I'm sure we're going to have more conversations about that through the course of this week. Folks, we're going to continue our coverage throughout the week of the second annual Ministerial to Advance Religious Freedom here at the U.S. Department of State. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.
Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.